Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is Weekly Comic Spotlight 120 for comics originally released on November 25th, 2009. Now, because of the Thanksgiving holidays, I didn't get my books until Wednesday.
I got mine on Thursday.
Yeah, mine spent the weekend in Indiana, courtesy of UPS, which I thought was very thoughtful of them. I hope they had a good holiday. I would have liked getting them earlier, though. And then I guess this week's post-Thanksgiving may also be late. I don't know. I mean, the holidays is totally messed
up. Well, that's the dark side of getting a mail order is usually a holiday will cause two late weeks. One late week because, you know, shipping because of the holiday, and then the other week, if the books come out late, they ship late, you know, so it's like usually you get 2 weeks tap.
Yeah. Kind of annoying.
But I think this week the new books came out on Thursday instead of Wednesday, so they didn't leave DCBS until a day later than they normally do.
Yeah, it may just come down to is UPS able to make up that time on the weekend or not, because they don't deliver, and sometimes mine would be almost here kind of. I mean, for me, that weekend delays it by a day, so it may not with this. I don't know, but you know, it's so unpredictable with the shipping this time of year.
Yeah, I usually get mine late 2 weeks for Thanksgiving and Christmas. So
yeah, I have had a year or two where because they've staffed up and the package load hadn't been what they thought or whatever, once or twice it'll come faster, but usually not. So, first book of the week, Justice League of America number 39, Blackest Night crossover. This is by James Robinson, Mark Bagley, and Rob Hunter. This is the one that you've seen probably the little posters at the comic store saying we're going to get that new lineup of superheroes. And didn't happen. I liked the cover here. But we were talking last night on our monthly previews teleconference about how covers can kind of set expectations. This kind of set an expectation for me of we got this black lantern of Dr. Arthur Light, the evil Dr. Light, fighting the new female Dr. Light we've had since, you know, Crisis on Infinite Earths. I'm thinking, that should be cool. Now I'm thinking that cover should be on the next issue.
Yeah, you get like the very, very end, you know, is that. And, you know, most of it you got like Zatara fighting, Black Lantern Zatara going after Zatanna. You got the Vibe running around. I thought it was an okay issue. For me, it's just a very personal opinion, like always. Mark Bagley, I loved his art on Ultimate Spider-Man. It's not working for me on this book. I mean, he gives everyone kind of like a youthful look, which, you know, for, young Peter Parker in high school, that looks really great. For none of these heroes I'm looking at in the Justice League, it's not clicking with me.
Well, you know, you mentioned that last night on the call, and I was thinking about that, and I think he hit it right on the head there with he has a kind of a looser feel and his characters kind of look a little bit younger. So if he were on like Young Justice back in the day or Teen Titans or, maybe the upcoming JSA All-Stars, again, all of which feature younger characters, his art style would fit. This is the JLA. JLA is classic old school superheroics. And while his style works, it's really not a perfect fit because, again, he's got that looser, more youthful kind of a feel to it. And to me, the JLA is always a bit more of a straight-laced, I don't want to say suit and tie kind of a book, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, and it's like maybe the eyes, too. It's a little bigger eyes.
He's got a just a little bit of the manga eye thing kind of going. His Dr. Light here reminds me of MJ from Ultimate Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. And he's doing good art, but I got to agree, his art is not the perfect fit for this book.
And he's a good artist. You know, I don't want to knock the guy. It's just, you know, a matter of fit for me.
Yeah. I think there are other books at DC that that his style would fit better with the material. And I'm leaning more towards, you know, Titans, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And ironically, had this actually featured the new lineup, that would have been mainly Titans and might have been a better fit. So, you know, who knows. And overall, I liked this issue. You know, I didn't love it. I really liked the exchange we got at one point between Plastic Man and Red Tornado about Scooby-Doo and Eighth Man. It was just a nice little character moment. You know, so they've got some cool things like that. Aspects of the fight between Zatanna and the Black Lantern version of her father, where it's like, you know, cast a spell to kill them, cancel the spell, cancel the cancel spell, kind of. It's like...
Never really seen them using the power to cancel another spell before. It seems like, okay, it makes sense, but I just haven't seen that before. It's always been...
It seemed like a kludge to me.
Yeah.
If it had been, you know, destroy that, repair that, destroy that, repair that, kind of, and doing counterbalancing spells, I'd have been okay. But for the spell to actually be cancel that last spell, it comes down to who talks faster.
Right.
So I was a little let down by that particular fight. You know, having the Detroit League as Black Lanterns, not bad. You know, if for no other reason, we can see a couple of these characters die again and again and again. I will say that the artists, both Bagley here and just kind of across the board at DC with the Black Lanterns, are doing a very good job of taking whatever character they're turning into a Black Lantern, keeping the basics of their costume, and re-theming it as a Black Lantern thing very well for the most part. The one I didn't think that worked as well for was Zatanna's father, but he didn't really have an iconic costume to begin with. So, you know, at first when he's doing the, abracadabra, I'm thinking, this is abracadabra? You know, the Flash villain?
I had that exact same thought, you know. I had that exact same thought when I saw that full page thing.
Yeah.
Because, you know, with the top hat and everything, I mean, he could have been abracadabra.
Yeah.
And abracadabra was, like, very black and everything, too, you know, costume.
Yeah, really. I mean, the basic stage magician, black suit, top hat kind of look. That fit him and like half a dozen other characters almost. I mean, I thought this was good. I didn't think it was great. For me, I'm kind of hovering between a high 3 and a low 4.
It was kind of a solid 3 for me. It was good, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't even a high 3 for me. It probably got pulled down by, you know, my ambivalence about, you know, the art matching on, you know, for me.
Mm-hmm. For me, part of it was the expectation, the cover set of the Dr. Light's fighting. I thought that could have been really cool, and maybe it will be next issue, but I went into this expecting something to be on that next page every time, and, you know, we hit the end, and, well, I guess it's next month. So,
right.
It wasn't a
right.
bait and switch, but it almost felt that way. So that hampered my enjoyment a little. What was actually in the book, again, very good. So I'm probably going to go with a 3. I did like getting the Red Lantern ring with this. And, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing where Robinson goes with the Justice League. But, you know, we were promised to have that by now, and they haven't even really started that storyline yet. So, you know, I'm a little disappointed with that.
Do you know, so this was a $3.99 book. They gave you the 30 pages, which, you know, makes it roughly equivalent to a 22-page $2.99 book. But do you know how many of the other Ring books were $3.99 books?
I think the majority of them.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if they, like, you know, were just kind of like goosing their revenue a little bit by making sure that the Rings came with a book that they threw a few extra. I mean, at least they threw a few extra pages into it, you know, to make up for it. You know, DC does do that, you know, to their credit. So,
I am pretty sure Doom Patrol is the one I'm not sure what the price was on, but all the others I'm pretty sure were $3.99. I'll double check. I'm compiling a list of which ring came with which book and all that stuff in preparation for the next Mayo report, because I'm really curious how the sales spiked on some of these books.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones where you buy 25 and you get two bags of 50 rings were the lower selling books versus some of them where you buy 50, you get 50.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Blackest Night was that way. Justice League might have been that way. I'd have to go check my notes. But, I mean, obviously they're making sure they don't lose money on the ring promotion.
Right.
It would have been nice, although I certainly didn't expect this, if there had been some connection between the color of the ring that came with the book and the story in the book. I mean, at the very least, the yellow ring going with Rebels or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But that would have almost mandated every book have some connection to a particular core, which obviously didn't happen. Other than the black core, of course.
Right.
Yeah, for me, good solid issue. Could have been a little better. I agree with your comments on the art style not being perfect fit for the book. But Bagley's at least a good artist and, you know, one who's capable of getting stuff out on time. So.
Right.
So, shall we move on to Marvel?
Sure. We got Hercules number 138, which is continuing the Assault on New Olympus storyline from the one-shot that came out a week or two ago. And, boy, I love this issue. There were some really nice, I mean, I like the art, and there were a couple of really nice exchanges in it. Van Lente's a really good writer.
I like what he and Pack are doing on this title, and I'm glad to see Amadeus Cho and Hercules back in the same storyline. When they were kind of alternating issues there, it was still good, don't get me wrong, but I like the interplay between those two characters a lot. And you're right, this issue just had a ton of stuff in it. What I really liked is it started with kind of that gathering of heroes having already happened in the one-shot, and I think reading the one-shot is certainly a good idea, and it's helpful, but not 100% required, because they hit the highlights in here. You know, you get the recap, but you ought to read the one-shot. But you start with that gathering of heroes. They do kind of the traditional Mission Impossible, here's what we've got to break into, kind of, you know, here's the challenge. And then they actually get a good ways into that challenge and that mission, and quite a bit of action. A lot happens there, a couple of good twists here and there, and end on kind of a, you know, oh crap, what are we going to do now kind of moment.
Mm-hmm.
And it had so many kind of plot points in this issue compared to your average comic these days. You know, I felt like I got a lot more story. And, I mean, this was standard length story for the main part, plus there was the backup for the Agents of Atlas stuff. But, you know, and I will be honest, I am so far behind on Agents of Atlas that I kind of just skimmed the backup story. But, you know, for me, even at the, what was this? This was a $3.99 book. Even excluding the backup feature, I felt I got my $3.99 worth out of this.
Yeah, you got 29 pages of story and art here. So, the backup, it was okay. Especially, I mean, probably more so if you're following and are familiar with the Agents Atlas. If you've never seen Agents of Atlas before and are not following that, I'm not sure how useful that backup story would be to you.
I had read the first part of that backup story, I guess, in either the one-shot or the previous Herc issue or whatever.
I think it was in the one-shot.
It was in the one-shot. And I've read the original Agents of Atlas miniseries they did. I read the first issue. I have not read any of the other 10 issues of the series or the X-Men versus thing. So I'm like about a year behind on their continuity. So I felt out of touch and that it was almost, I don't want to say irrelevant to me, but I knew kind of going in that I was behind on what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of disconnected, just again, my baggage, not theirs, on that, which is why I just kind of skimmed the stuff.
Right.
It looked perfectly good and stuff, but, and part of it is the art style for that there was something about it. I mean, it's still a good, clean style for the most part, but maybe it was the coloring or whatever. Didn't click with me quite as much as the art for the main story, which I really loved.
It's a little, yeah.
You know what I mean, though.
It is a little different. Yeah, I know what you mean. It's not...
It's got the same line work. I don't know if it's right. Just the coloring and kind of Photoshop-y sort of effects. It's like it's a mistier, hazier kind of a story in a few panels. Mm-hmm. Certainly not overall, though.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying.
But, you know, it's one that I really need to catch up on Agents of Atlas and then reread these first two parts of this backup feature because I think I could give it a fairer shake at that point. At this point, I'm not really wanting to review that part because I don't think I'd be... I'm not coming in with the baggage I'd like to. Mm-hmm. So, or the backstory I'd like to, I should say.
What I do feel, though, is for the main Hercules story, this issue could be a jumping on point, in my opinion, to someone who's not read Hercules before.
Certainly somebody who's a fan of Mighty Avengers who wants to try out Hercules, this is an excellent opportunity to do so. I agree with that 100%. If you're a Spider-Man fan and want to try it out, that'd be a good call too. And just kind of in general, while you can and probably should read that Assault on New Olympus one-shot, like I was saying earlier, I don't think you've got to. I think they give everything you've got to have in the story in this story.
Right, which is always a good thing.
Yes. So I would easily give this a 4, might almost give it a 5. At this point, I'm going to stay with a really high 4.
I am going to give it the 5. And the reason I'm giving it the 5 is almost exclusively because of the U.S. Agent and Hercules interaction on...
About the gods?
Yeah, about the gods, yeah.
That was a really good character moment. I loved that. That was... You know, some cool stuff. And what I also liked was they've got this plan Cho has and says, hey, it's an oldie but a goodie kind of a thing. And they have a couple of good plot twists in here. You've got action, you've got character moments, you've got some clever writing in terms of the plotting. What more, and excellent art. What more could you want out of a comic?
Yeah, they hit all the bases here. Really solid issue.
I'm trying to think if there's any reason I shouldn't give this a 5. And I'm coming up with nothing. So I think I will give this a 5. I mean, to me, it's... You know, it really shows why I'm enjoying this title and why I would like to see, you know, more out of particularly Van Lente, but Pak is certainly carrying his weight here, too. And why I think a lot of people have just unfairly dismissed this title as... You know, one that kind of backdoored its way into existence through World War Hulk. But it certainly is worth, you know, picking up and reading.
I think one other thing I'll say about this is, you know, as a kind of sub-event, you know, the assault on New Olympus, you know, kind of, it's not really an event. I don't think it's in a crossover and anything, but as a storyline or something. I think they're doing a really good job on it, again, because it's... To me, it's an issue that I think somebody could pick this up and get drawn into this title, which so many times I'll pick up something that I'm not normally reading, you know, for some kind of an event, and I'll read it, and it's like, you know, I don't really feel that compelled to continue on with it, but I'd really be interested to hear from listeners, too, if somebody does pick this issue up and gives it a read, if that actually did have that kind of an effect on them, that they liked it enough to want to read more.
Yeah, particularly if they're getting either just Hercules or just Mighty Avengers or just Spider-Man, and it branches them into the other books.
Yeah, and that's a good point. If you're reading Mighty Avengers and you're not reading Hercules, or if you're reading Spider-Man and enjoying it and not reading Hercules, I would encourage you to try this issue 138 out. Because I do think, you know, those characters featured in this story are handled really nicely and in keeping with how they're handled in their own books.
Well, and to me, this is what a kind of a crossover storyline, because it's not an event, but it's more than just a storyline, too. This is how this sort of thing should be handled, because it gave kind of equal screen time, if you will, to Herc, Spider-Man, and the Mighty Avengers. Everybody got their chance to be in the limelight and stuff. And it didn't feel like, okay, this is a Hercules book, and Spider-Man's in the background with the Mighty Avengers kind of thing. So it has, I think, a really good chance of branching people into the other stuff, getting people excited about the other properties. Whereas you look at other titles and storylines along these lines, I'm going to go to Image United as a counterexample here, where they fail to do that entirely. You know, you go in liking who you like, you come out maybe still liking who you like, but certainly not interested in anyone else. At least that's how it was for me. Whereas I think here, they've done such a good job on the story, the art, and the characterizations that this sort of a storyline, this sort of execution, I think has a better chance than average of branching people into other books, and that's just smart business for Marvel.
Yeah, and I'd love to see, you know, when they do an actual good quality story like this, you know, that's well done, nice art, nice story, nice moments and all that, to see it work and have it increase the sales on a book instead of increasing the sales on a book through some kind of gimmick like variant covers or, you know, mega crossovers, because this is not a mega crossover. It's featuring the other characters, but I don't believe it's crossing the storyline over through a bunch of other titles to kind of force you to read it.
Yeah, I think it might go into maybe Mighty Avengers, but I'm not even sure about that, actually. Where is the next part of the story going to happen? Does it say at the end here?
I think it's happening in the next issue of Hercules.
Yeah, I guess so. All right. I couldn't remember if it was going to cross into the other stuff or not, but I like how they're, again, trying to bridge interest in different titles and doing it again with a great story. Because I agree with you. I'd much rather see sales bump up from that sort of method than any other kind of gimmick they can throw at it, no matter how much I might like the gimmick, like the power rings that we had on the Justice League issue.
Right.
This is the better way to increase sales. Because these would be sustainable increases that you're going to keep issue after issue.
That's true. I mean, if somebody picks a book up and sticks with it because they enjoy the story, as opposed to, you know, because they, you know, kind of got essentially tricked into it.
Yeah, or they got bribed by, you know, a piece of plastic or a cover.
Variant cover or something like that, you know.
Yeah. So, yeah, 5 out of 5 for me. I think before the only reason I was hesitating is, again, the backup feature. But, I mean, just based on the Herc alone, this is a book well worth getting, and if people have been ignoring it and have any interest at all in Hercules and Amadeus Cho, look at the back issues, the trades, and stuff like that. Certainly try out this storyline if you're into either Spider-Man or the Mighty Avengers.
Right.
Shall we move on to our other book of the week?
Sure. We got Buck Rogers number 6 from Dynamite.
Now, we talked about this back with the first issue or the zero issue?
I think the zero issue.
Yeah. And I'm not going to claim to have any major back history with Buck Rogers. I watched the show in the 80s on and off. So I'm not going to judge this against, is it really faithful to Buck Rogers or not? I'm going to just judge it as a comic. And as such, I'm loving this. It's a cool sci-fi action adventure kind of a thing, and I like having that kind of a series on my pull list. And I'd be hard pressed to name too many, if any, other titles that fill that void for me that are not, you know, superhero in nature or something like that. The art style they've got here by Carlos Paul, nice kind of a clean, almost minimalist, but not overly minimalist, so minimalistic, we'll say, or ish. Kind of a thing, really fits this kind of, I don't want to say utopian future, but nice, clean, minimalist future kind of thing. It fits well with what they're going with, and it's great art. And what I liked about this issue is it was kind of a downtime issue, kind of a quiet issue, where we learn more about the time era that Buck has found himself in. And it acts both as kind of an epilogue or end cap to the opening story arc from the previous issues and a prologue to the next story arc, and not just a thump, here's a done in one issue, but one that fits into the grander picture. And I really liked that. They had a Easter egg or two, if you will, with the Theopolizer, which I think was a reference to that Dr. Theopolis computer brain that Twiki carried around in the TV show. Which is just, you know, kind of a cute thing if you catch it, not a big deal if you don't. And it was just a fun, good story. You know, I'm enjoying the series, and I really want to see it stick around for the long haul.
I'll have a slightly different opinion than that.
Well, all right, then. So what did you think, Bob?
Well, I was behind on this title, so I ended up reading issues 3 through 6.
Okay.
And they actually switched artists with this issue. This issue is Carlos Paul. The previous arc was done by Carlos Rafael. And I think Carlos Rafael has a little nicer, cleaner art style than Carlos Paul. I like Carlos Paul a little bit less. And you see
That's
it a
fair.
Lot for me on page 5 with like the faces. Like Wilma and her brother, they're just a little more angular.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing on the previous page with the little Buck face in that inset with the red line around it.
I will grant the previous issues had a stronger art.
And it's not a knock. It's not fair for this issue, but I thought that the first story arc ended really weak. It's almost like I didn't realize the first story arc had actually ended because they defeated these guys, and I guess their ship blew up, but, you know, in a little tiny panel. And, I mean, I just didn't get a strong feeling of closure from that first arc.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden Buck's on trial in the beginning of this issue, and it's like, well, where the heck did that come from? You know, I just wasn't following the thread there. And then, you know, kind of going out and they're like camping in the wilderness with giant bugs and stuff. And it's just, it really didn't work for me, this issue. I mean, I liked the space adventure stuff that we had previously, but this issue was a real step down for me.
It had been a little while since I read the previous issue, so I wasn't really doing kind of a back-to-back comparison between the two. But I can definitely see where you're coming from on that. And the impression I get is they're trying to do more of a never-ending saga kind of a thing than very chunky kind of story arcs like a lot of comics have these days.
Yeah, and I can appreciate that. It's just, you know, the flow from number 5 to number 6 didn't work for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like the space sci-fi aspect a lot more than the giant leech monsters in a swamp aspect that we got in this issue. And the next arc promises to maybe be more of that since they're going down into some tunnels underneath the ravaged landscape. So kind of not that excited about the direction that this has taken.
That's fair. I can see that. I guess part of it for me is what I'm enjoying about this title is it's different just by nature of being a good sci-fi action adventure thing than the majority of what's on my pull list, which is superhero type slugfests. And I got nothing wrong with superhero slugfests. I love those. But having something that kind of scratches that itch for a good sci-fi ish story, even if this is more action adventure than, you know, hardcore sci-fi or whatever. It just seems like as popular of a genre that is for television and movies, there's not that many ongoing comic titles that are in that area. I mean, and I'm kind of discounting the Star Wars and Star Trek stuff as licensed properties versus sci-fi, although clearly they kind of fit in that category.
Right, and, you know, I guess, you know, Day Tripper is sort of sci-fi. I just finished reading Ignition City, mm-hmm. which is sci-fi, and I thought that was an excellent series. We have Existence that I'm reading from. It's not like space opera sci-fi, but it's a sci-fi type of book. We've got Resurrection.
I guess for me, part of it is more the space opera type stuff.
Right, and see, that's the thing. It's like if it was more space opera, I would probably like it more. Even the space part that we had in the first arc, those animal guys, was not really working for me. Because
and I can understand
where did they
that.
Come from? I didn't really get the motivation there. It's just, I mean, I can see, you know, liking it. It's just, it's not working for me. And as a matter of fact, I'm probably going to be dropping the series.
Okay, I can see that. And again, I think your criticisms are valid ones. They've got a lot of unanswered questions here. And I'm hoping over time they kind of, you know, answer some of those and build up a fun universe here. But, you know, if they do spend a story arc going underground, fighting other monsters and stuff, is that going to keep the audience or not? That's a fair question and a definite risk they're facing.
Right.
So, for me, I give this a 4. I liked it. I think for a quiet transition issue, it did a good job bridging two story arcs. You know, I thought it was fun. I'm not going to say it was perfect by any stretch. Certainly, I understand where you're coming from with your comments and don't necessarily disagree with those. What rating would you give this?
I would give it a 2.
I was going to say, since you're dropping it, that was pretty much a given, but I thought I'd ask anyways.
Yeah.
Cool. Like I said, my books came late this week. I did read a few others, specifically the Blackest Night number 5, the
Green Lantern that went with it.
The Green Lantern that went with it, which I read after the Blackest Night number 5, although I should have read before. But I didn't know any better because they didn't tell me any better, so I blame them. I read the Teen Titans Blackest Night, and I found all of those very enjoyable. I just continue to love what they're doing with Blackest Night, and again, the Justice League story we talked about, you know, continues along those lines. I read Image United number 1. And I found the mix of the artists on the same page and panels to work much better than I had expected. So artistically, I found that very interesting. Writing-wise, if maybe it was a conscious decision to have the character who narrated the opening couple of pages and majority of the story speak in highly cliche, cumbersome, and bad dialogue, monologue kind of stuff. Maybe that was intentional. It annoyed me nonetheless. To me, it was an Image crossover in all the classic ways, none of which are good. Pretty art, story to suffice to move the art along, but that's about it. And I'm going to be curious to see where that goes, but I felt it was cumbersome.
Yeah, and I kind of passed on it after I read the preview issue that I got in San Diego. So hearing what I've, and not just from you, from a couple other people too, hearing what I've heard about Image United, I'm kind of glad I passed on it.
It just felt like a by-the-numbers crossover story. It does nothing to get you excited about some of these characters, a few of which haven't really seen the light of day recently. So they don't even reintroduce some of these characters. So, as good as Incredible Hercules was to kind of getting you on board with characters you may not be familiar with and expanding your interest in the Marvel Universe, Image United should have done that and failed, in my opinion, completely.
Right.
So, not Kirkman's best writing by a long shot.
Now, moving back on to Blackest Night really quick.
Sure.
I think number 5... my personal favorite issue so far of the series, and I mentioned this last night on the previews call, but I think this differentiates it from so many other events we've had in the last few years, because there's been an inflection point somewhere, you know, 3, 4, 5 issues in on most of the events that have happened, and that includes Infinite Crisis, Identity Crisis,
Final Crisis, Secret Invasion, Civil War.
Final Crisis, yeah. Secret Invasion, you know, all these different books where something happens where it's like I was just totally jazzed about the series for the first couple of issues, and then something happened that kind of just tossed a bucket of cold water on my enthusiasm for the series. And this, so far, I mean, it's 5 out of 8. It's been building and building and getting better and better and better with every issue. And I read this issue and I loved it more than I loved any of the other issues. It had some great moments in it. That closing page
the ending
that
of
they
that
had
was great. Yeah.
The the beginning of it on the double page splash where you had the oaths for all the different cores except the orange one. You know, just so many different things in there. It was a great, great issue, and I'm really applaud Geoff Johns because he is, you know, I guess I'll have to hold my final judgment until we get to the end of it, but, you know, so far it's just been such a pleasure to read this thing.
Well, even if by some bizarre happenstance it tanks over the next next three with 6, 7, and 8, which I cannot imagine happening, just getting 5 really, really strong issues out of 8 consecutively is something they should be, you know, applauded for. What I like is what I've had as kind of my major takeaway enjoyment point or whatever from every issue has been a little different from issue to issue. The first one, it did such a good job of building up kind of that sense of anticipation and dread of, you know, everything that you've, you know, dealt with before that's died, be it loved ones or enemies or whatever, is going to come back to haunt you. And kind of that click, click, click as you go up the first arc of a roller coaster before you go down aspect of the first issue, to me, knocked it out of the park. With issue 4, it was the character moments between the Flash, Mira, and the Atom, and kind of, okay, you two have to step up, coming from the Flash. It was so brilliantly done and really kind of took those characters from almost secondary, you know, characters of questionable importance, and put them into a position of, okay, you guys have to step up. You've got to become the A-list characters for this story arc, because that's what we're demanding out of you thing. And I thought that was a beautiful transition, and I loved seeing a writer take characters that could easily have just been ignored if used at all, and put them in the limelight and make them carry it. And then with this issue, again, the oaths, the ending moment, some of the reveals and stuff, it was just, the thing is just kicking on all cylinders. And, you know, if they can keep it up for those next 3 issues, and I got no reason to think they can't, this is just going to, I think, go down as one of the best event titles ever. You know, I don't think it's, I mean, to me, the one I would compare it to is Crisis on Infinite Earths, not because that was a brilliant story, because let's face it, it was a little kludgy in a few places, but because it was so pivotal to the DC Universe and so unlike anything that had been done before, whereas Blackest Night, I think, equals that in terms of epicness, ramifications, and things of that nature, yet is just such a cohesive and brilliant story. I'd be hard-pressed to name any other event from Marvel or DC, or any other company for that matter, that even comes close to this level of quality and enjoyment for me. So, yeah, that. And what I liked is most of the crossover titles and stuff they've done, be it in Teen Titans or, you know, the Doom Patrol or Rebels or wherever, pretty much every one of those I thought has been a really strong crossover.
Right.
With the exception of that Superman-Batman story.
Yeah, it was kind of weak.
So I think Geoff Johns is just, you know, doing a bang-up job at DC, and I really want to see down the line kind of what their exit strategy is out of Darkest Night, or Black. I always call it Darkest Night, it's Blackest Night, and I know this. But I want to see where their exit strategy is out of this, if they're going to keep some of these other cores around in any way, shape, or form, or if this builds to a next storyline down, you know, event down the line, or does it position the DC Universe better, and can DC take advantage of kind of the renewed interest and excitement they're getting out of this, and kind of bump some sales up across the board. That's why I'm trying to keep up with all those titles as they come out every week.
Yeah, they're absolutely top of the stack for me when they come out.
Really, beyond that and the books we're reviewing, I've still got the majority of the last month's worth of books sitting to be read. I've got 192 books plus whatever is in this shipment that I haven't just mentioned that I read. So I've got over 200 to be reading. Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I think that does it.
Cool.
Join us next week when we discuss JSA All-Stars number 1 from DC, Black Widow and the Marvel Girls, number one from Marvel, and the Empowered One-Shot from Dark Horse Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.